the course. We are dead. We are all dead.
We're supposed to make the world a better place.
Well,
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I know Kung Fu.
You either die a hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
This whole thing is insane. This whole thing is insane.
300 years ago, you'd have been burned at the stake.
What do all men of power want? More power.
This is now the United States of Zombieland.
This whole thing is insane.
Man is evil, capable of nothing but destruction.
Everybody is stuck with the things that they're not proud of.
More power.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
More power.
There can be only one.
Are you a God-fearing man, Senator? That's such a strange phrase. I've always thought of God as a teacher, as a bringer of light, wisdom, and understanding. You see, I think what you really are afraid of is me.
Happy heresies and welcome to the desert of the real. Heresy shouldn't be this much fun, but it is. It just is. Especially with the latest AB Live audio version for thee. Stanley Kubrick's The Shining remains one of history's most impactful horror films, and it's esoteric fertile ground too. New research reveals the film is even more of a treasure chest of mysticism and revelation. Get ready for a deep and visual dive into the movie, including Kabbalah, numerology, Jungian archetypes, Tarot, and much more. And yes, there will be moon landing stuffy stuff. Without a doubt, this is the most complete and exhaustive esoteric summary on the film. For this aeonic task, David Block materialized at the Overlook Hotel in the virtual Alexandria. David is a researcher and practitioner of more than 18 years on the Kabbalah, alchemy, and the left-hand path. Don't get red-rummed, for next week we have another exhaustive show. The topic will be the evil creator and the Sethians. Yaldibaldi will be in the burning house, along with spanning content on the classical Gnostics. Thank you so much for those who support this Red Pill Cafeteria. You are amazing, and your support, company, and feedback help grow this blasphemy. We need Gnosis more than ever, needless to say. You won't find this high-quality Gnostic and Hermetic wisdom, or many of my guests and their unique insights, anywhere else in cyberspace or even meat space. Don't forget my voiceover availability for any podcast, commercial, audiobook, documentary, or whatevs. I'll bring you stellar results with down-to-home professionalism. And consider, in these hard economic times, the Red Circle subscription, which is only $4.99 a month for all complete shows. And you can tip if you want to support. Other than that, let us to our latest AB Live. Write your own gospel, live your own myth, and get your shining.
You set him up and I'll knock him back, Lloyd. One by one.
You know, some places are like people. Some shine and some don't.
Welcome, everybody, to AB Live. Yes, men still have nipples and birdie num-nums under sheep. Very excited today because we are going, well, first let me introduce myself. My name is Miguel Connor. I am your pompous of Gnosis. And heresy shouldn't be this much fun. It just is. It just is. And we are going to have a lot of fun today. We are going to be covering one of a movie that I've seen so many times has really affected me. Obviously, I love all of Stanley Kubrick's content. He's one of the greatest, perhaps the greatest director of all times. And my God, an individual so full of occult and esoteric messages. And as I've said before, Dr. Strangelove is suddenly very relevant today, as we are closer than ever to the brink of some sort of nuclear interaction between power players of this world. Hell is closed and all the devils are here, as Shakespeare said. But we want to do something about it, and the way is inside, and the way is to unveil all the secrets and realities behind what's going on today. So with us, we have the pleasure of being joined by David Block. David, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you, Miguel.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background before we get started on a spanning presentation on The Shining.
Yes. I was waking up 18, 19 years ago for EFK, quite common, I think. I understood quite soon that I had to transform myself in order to cope with the darkness I was confronted with. So I started to study esoteric matters to find something to hold on to or believe in. And I find myself through alchemy in the beginning, and then I start to study Kabbalah, left-hand path. So I am a practicing esoteric person today. So I'm not talking about, I talk about people who misuse our knowledge to do wicked things or bad things with it, because you can do good things and you can do bad things with it. And I think Kubrick tried to say that, what he tried to say with his movies, even in Space Odyssey 2001, you have this double side of the esoteric knowledge. You can transform or you can perish with it or go under with it. Or, yeah. So I am an esoteric person. So I'm not beating down on any practitioner. I am saying that some use our knowledge for bad things. And I think that exactly what Stanley Kubrick tried to say with his movies.
Everything casts a shadow, as they say. Everything can be weaponized. And yeah, that's been the debate. Was Kubrick part of the deep state or the cabal, yeah, whatever you want to call it, or was he actually trying to give out? And we can go, yeah, that's like, that could be a whole other show. But this show is on The Shining. David will be giving a presentation. We will likely have to break it into part one or part two, because he leaves no stone unturned, and this is going to be the most exhaustive exploration on The Shining you're ever going to have. But first, we've also got the Moondog Vance. Vance, how are you doing? You got some red rum with you?
Oh, yeah. I got a whole bottle of it over here. I think it's red. Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, Shining is one of our family favorites, too. My son in particular loves it, so.
Awesome.
We'll see. Maybe he likes little girls, you know. They're cute for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good. I think your son will get a lot out of this. So awesome. And for the audience there, I see you already going into the chats. I don't know if we will actually have time to field any questions. If you do a super chat, we'll have to, but keep in mind, we might not be able to get into those questions because, again, David is going to take us on an incredible journey through the film The Shining. So other than that, not much housekeeping.
Yeah, I think.
Go ahead. What were you saying?
Yeah, I think this is the most most extensive analysis of the movie so far, and I will present a lot of new material for you. I promise you that. Just let me pick up some pace. Part one will be an introduction, and I promise you to go into the detail in part two and three. So bear with me for
Yes, yes, we'll get there. It's not uncommon. I've watched podcasts where you have to break the show up because, but yeah, this is thorough, not even close. And I've watched documentaries, I've read books. This is the one, true seekers down here at the Virtual Alexandria. So, shall we get started, David?
Yeah.
All right. Let us pull up. Let's pull up the thing. Okay. Everybody can see it down there in the chat room in the Kanoma. All right. The Shining, an esoteric analysis dedicated to Stanley Kubrick by David Block. So
good.
All right.
Yeah. I break down the analysis in three main parts, and it's because they are quite long in and of themselves. I hope we will manage to get through part one and two. And maybe we do part three later on in the second part. In part one, I introduce my work and also go into a little bit of the detail. But in part two, it will take up pace and I will start to show you details. And part three, even more details. So as I said, bear with me and I promise you to show what The Shining is all about. Right.
Next slide. Let's do it.
So this is part one of three. I hope we get through part one and two today.
All right.
Yes. So this is the introduction for my work. And I will tell you a little bit where it started. It started on a university for real. It took up pace on a university in Sweden. We can go to the next slide. I had already start to work with The Shining or try to decode it before, but I had a master course in media in Sweden, and we were supposed to do an installment, an interactive installment. And present the installment as it was a real case for the class and try to make it as real as possible. And I chose to do a Kubrick installment on the Kubrick exhibition. And my idea was that you should play Danny on his bike and go around in the hotel and try to decode the the meaning behind it, The Shining. Because I think that the best way to make people understand is to get them involved. So I had many different ideas why I wanted to do it. I didn't just want to do it for the master degree. I wanted to do it for Kubrick's sake, and also because I think Kubrick had something to say. Who is important. So I had many different layers of ideas behind this project, not just the master course. And of course, this is not an academic work per se, because it had become much more than that. So this is not the academic work, but that's where they started there for real, you can say. Yeah. Next slide. Awesome.
Yeah, for those who will be listening in audio after this, we are describing everything so you won't be missing too much. So, yeah, again, next slide, interactive game with Danny as the main character.
Yeah. So my idea was to have this graphic and all the feeling of the hotel, and you were going very fast with the bicycle and Danny and pick up clues and piece them together. And also at the same time interact with different stuff on the material stuff in the exhibition. So you get these keys and you get this puzzle in material form in the installment as well. You played the game and you interacted with the objects for real on the spot, on the exhibition.
Awesome. I'm surprised somebody hasn't created one already, like a real video game, but
yeah,
they should.
Yeah. Exactly. It would be a great game, I think.
It would be awesome. Yes. Pretty scary. Now, in the next slide, we've got a movie that I love. Yeah, Room 237.
Yeah. And I want to mention this documentary as well. They did a documentary named Room 237. And I think all of you know about it already, different ideas, what the movie was about. And I have watched it as well, and I liked it, but I felt something was off. I didn't buy into good information, but I didn't think they had put it together. I felt something was off. I felt they touched on something, but they didn't really crack the code. And it made me more curious, of course. That's how I am as a person. If I see something and I don't agree, I don't become angry or stop. I just get more enthusiastic and I want to know more. Why don't I agree? what's off?
That's by Rodney Asher. He's been a past guest, and yeah, but he does good documentaries.
Yeah. Yeah, the movie's good, and it's a very good introduction to The Shining. So watch it if you haven't seen it.
All right.
Yeah. So we come to the number 42 in part two here. And I will explain the number 42. I think many maybe know about the number 42 from the movie A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and, of course, the book. But what does it mean? People doesn't know. Well, why 42? And it's seen, like the audience in the movie. 42, what the fuck?
The answer to the universe.
Yeah.
We're just asking the wrong question.
Exactly. Now we explain the number 42 in esoteric lore here. Of course, they had more meaning than one. But for this movie, and the number 42 is very important. And you have this quote from a lady. I don't remember where I find it, but the business with the number 42, maybe it has nothing to do with the Holocaust, but then why the shirt? Why that movie on the TV? And 2 × 3 × 7 does equal 42. Yeah, and the number 42 is very important in the movie The Shining. And I will explain it now. The movie The Shining had premiere in USA May 23rd, 1980. That's very peculiar because it's exactly 42 years from now on, from 1980. It's just a couple of days. So maybe we can do part three on May 23rd. The 23rd and finish the analysis exactly 42 years later. I just want to mention it.
All right.
Yeah. So in the documentary, Room 237, you have different theories what the movie is about. And I want to mention one of them here. And it's through Jeffrey Cox, a history professor. And he is into this Holocaust and Hitler and that theory. And the reason why I mention him is he says some good things. And I have it highlighted in red here. I'm not going to go through everything he's writing, but Jeffrey Cox mentioned that the number 42 is on Dennis' sweatshirt. And the typewriter is from 1942. And it says, Cox says, Dan had no idea about the word, and now he knows. He's no longer dope about things. through the movie, Danny transform into a more enlightened person. And that's a very good analyze of Jeffrey Cox, even though he doesn't understand that the number 42 is about transformation, because Jeffrey Cox is not an esoteric person, so he doesn't connect the number 42. But that's a very true statement. And I like when people do good statements without knowing the esoteric background, because then I can fill in what they say with more proof. And that is what I'm going to do. And he mentioned a very important thing. And it's a color that he associates with ghosts, but also with power and with murder and with death. And he's talking about blue, the color blue. Kubrick uses color a lot. And when Kubrick highlights things in blue, Cox says, it's a color that he associates with ghosts, but also with power and with murder and with death. And that's a very important quote from Cox. And I will go mention it again later on. But I just mention it now. All right, we go forward.
Yeah, interesting. For the audience, according to Cox, the film is an allegory about coming to terms with Hitler's extermination camps.
So, yeah.
Interesting theory.
Yeah, and it is in the movie, but it's not the main theme.
But
he's touching on something.
Yeah, it makes sense. And Danny is sort of the eyes of the world. He sees the horror and everything. His waking up, as you said. All right, next slide says the typewriter and Leon Vitali.
Yeah, and also one of these details I like. When I see details like this, I get very concentrated and try to understand why. The typewriter and Leon Vitali. Leon Vitali says that all the typewriter in 1942, for example, belonged to Kubrick himself, and that particular model was once a commonplace as late model iPhones. Kubrick longtime assistant Leon Vitali. And why that's important is that I think what Kubrick tried to say here is that Kubrick's typewriter, Kubrick writes through Jack, and he is writing about number 42, and Danny is number 42. And I'm coming back to that why soon.
All right, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
Yeah, the famous line there.
Right.
And that's, I will come back to that as well very soon.
All right, next slide.
Yeah, the story is about number 42, and Danny is number 42, and part of him, Jack, because Jack is his father. Danny goes from being a zero to the number 42 in the movie The Shining, and the transformation goes through Jack. He has to transform to survive Jack in the movie. Jack is 24. And I will come back to that later. Danny is 42. That is a palindromic number. It's a number that remains the same when its digits are reversed. So all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, equals all play and no work makes Danny a dull boy. Without work, Danny will not become number 42. It takes effort and transform the spirit. It takes effort to transform the spirit. Now we come back to Cox quote. Danny had no idea about the word, and now he knows. He's no longer dope about things. I will go back to this number 24 and 42 again. More important, the hotel and Danny, and July the 4th, 1921.
All right.
So now we come to the different themes in the movie, because it's not about one thing, but the movie has one main theme. But you have these side stories. They are all connected. So they are there for a reason. Kubrick didn't do anything without reason. Nothing is in the movie as a coincidence. It's there for a reason. And the next slide, we have the moon landing the theory about the moon landing. And that's an intriguing idea, but I don't really agree with Widener's statement that Kubrick faked the moon landing. And I think he missed the point a little bit here. Doesn't mean that I don't like Widener, or he has done a lot of good things, and you should listen to Widener. And I have listened to Widener. But just in this case, I think he's off a little bit. I will show you why. But it is there. It is there.
And as you say, the mass murder of the Indians, Native Americans, it's in the narrative, but it's not the main theme either.
Yeah. It is there, but it's not the main theme. And Kubrick had many different themes in the movie, all connected. Yeah, so the mass murder of Indians is not the main theme. I think we have gone through that. Some connection I have made is the Indians were shamans, for example. They had contacted nature spirits and lived in harmony with Mother Earth. Those responsible for the mass murder lived in cities, the modern society, and had contacted completely different spirits. The common denominator was their interest in the metaphysical and in spirits. So they both practiced esoteric methods and theories, but had very different ideas and contacted different kinds of spirit, nature spirits versus the fallen angels or the watchers.
Mm.
But you have a conflict there.
And that picture of Jack and the cans, what that you circled, what's in the cans?
Yeah. I think he tried to point out the conflict here between those opposing esoteric ideas.
Hmm.
And some of it also, if you take the esoteric practicing for the watchers and so on, it's very... can be take if you use it wrong, you go to transhumanism and technology. Mm-hmm. And technology is very anti nature and the natural habitat Indians, nature based esoteric practices versus transhumanism technology. So I think he tried to deepen that conflict. Yeah.
Next
slide. The hotel and Danny. Next slide.
Let's get into the hotel and Danny.
Yeah. Now, many have pointed out that the hotel is illogical. It doesn't... The room doesn't fit. And the hotel is a metaphysical maze. It is as physical as it is mental. So it is not only a material construct, a physical object. It is also a mental construct. So it's also in Danny's head and also Jack's head. But as an esoteric person, what is real? We call the material world Asaya, for example, in Kabbalah.
Mm-hmm.
And I use Asaya a lot because it distances yourself from this idea that the material world is the real and the metaphysical is unreal. if you use the terms for it. If you program your head to think differently. So we are calling this material world Asaya, the world of illusion. So the hotel is as physical as it is metaphysical. That's the reason why it's not logical.
All right.
Yeah, so what do we find in this hotel? We go through some important main scenes in the movie. You have one scene where he and his mother is watching a movie, Summer of 42, and the TV have no cord. And many have pointed out why Summer of 42 and why no cord to the television. And you see this metaphysical, Kubrick are trying to tell you the hotel is not only physical, it's also metaphysical. Something is off here. And why this movie Summer of 42? Now the number 42 comes up again. Why are they watching the Summer of 42? And I want to point out some important things about the movie Summer of 42. Next slide. We have the mother and the child. And in the movie, Wendy seems to love Danny. But she's also very disconnected. Wendy have cognitive dissonance. And her cognitive dissonance is greater than her love for Danny, I would say. Yes, the next slide. In the movie Summer of 42, you have a character named Dorothy. And in the end of the movie, I will read a quote from, not from the movie, but one who writes about the movie. Doris fled the Iceland and in the night, and an envelope is in the front door with Hermes' name on it. Inside is a note from Dorothy. She assures Hermes she will never forget him. Her note closes with the hope that Hermes may be spared the senseless tragedies of life. Now we have the name Dorothy. I think Kubrick wanted us to connect the name Dorothy with the Wizard of Oz. And I can't go into any details, but I will try to explain it as fast as I can. In the movie The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy is the fool. And in Tarot, the fool card has the number 0 and also 22. And it has also number 42 encoded in the fool card. The fool carries a bag behind his bag, behind his shoulder.
Right.
And in that bag, he had all the rest of the major arcana cards with him. Because the major arcana is supposed to transform you into something new. And you have all the cards you need to transform. You carry them with you when you have become the fool. Because when you are the fool, you have started to understand that you have been fooled. Then you can start to unravel and start to understand yourself and the world around you through the Major Arcana and through the Tarot cards. So the fool carries all the card with him or her. The fool have the potentiality to transform because he knows or she knows she is the fool. But before that, you cannot transform.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beginning of it. So you have all the cards you need to become something new. And this is the journey Danny is going through in the movie. And in the movie The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy is going through that. But I'm not going to talk about The Wizard of Oz, but it is difference between the book and the movie. And I have decoded the movie. So if you want me to do it, I can do it some other time. But it is a very interesting movie and a very interesting book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Next slide. So we have Dory the Fool, The Wizard of Oz. And you see her carry her bag and the dog, same as the fool, the dog and the bag over his shoulder. Yeah, next slide. So the story is about number 42, Jack and Danny. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. Danny is 42. Danny is 42, the fool. And you can see he has the number 42 on his shirt. And you can see the number also on the typewriter. Jack is typing on. And you can see Doopy in the door from Disney. Disney's Seven Dwarfs. And he's standing in a bathroom. And someone has pointed out that Doopy is disappearing from the door later on in the movie. That's not a coincidence, because Danny starts to transform to go from being the dupe or the zero, the fool, to become something new, because he has to. And it is through the obstacles, or the problems we have, or our downfalls or and failures that make us transform. That we need this trial to become something new. Yeah, next slide. So Danny the Fool equals 42. In the tarot, the major arcana, you have the card 13, 14, and 15. It is the death card, the art card, and the devil card. And if you add them together, you get 42. It doesn't mean that he is only those cards. He's all the major arcana, but those three cards is the most important cards. You have to die. Your old self has to die. And through art and craft making, you have to transform and become something new. And then you have to defeat the devil within and without. In this case, and the devil is in yourself, the dark side of yourself. You have to transform. But in this movie, you have Jack also as the devil. So he has to defeat the devil within himself and also without. But when we are using esoteric method, we are mostly talking about the devil inside us, the ego. We have to transform our ego to something new. So Danny's old self has to die in order to create something new, the death card. The card 14 and art. Danny have to create a new self with art, craft making, transformation with the spirit. And the devil card. Danny have to defeat the devil within and without, and that's Jack, his own father, in this case. And I have had a lecture about this tarot card and the secret behind the tarot card. I cannot go into that now, but I can explain more in detail if anyone wants to about the tarot and why 13, 14, 15 ends up in one row. There are a method to that, where you place the card in a certain way. But this is the main card. Danny have to transform himself through, or work his way through. And you probably know in Freemason, you have these death rituals, you have the skulls and skull and bones, you have the skull. Many of them go through a ritual where you play your own death. And that's the death card in the tarot. Your old self has to die in order to, for something new to come to surface. So this is nothing new in esoteric method or theory. Yeah, next slide then. So you have this room 237, and it has more than one meaning. You have, of course, 2 + 3 + 5 = 7 = 12. And 12 is a very important number. You have the zodiac. But 2 × 3 × 7 = 42. And we already explained that the 42 is Danny. So this is a fool's journey. When he entered room 237, he start his fool's journey, or the fool's journey. It is when Danny start his journey to become number 42.
Fascinating. All right. Very fascinating. All right.
And we have the mace. And many speculate about this mace. And in the movie, Kubrick, in his narrative, explained that it's an Indian burial ground. But it's also a mental mace, because the hotel is as mental as it is physical. And I think Kubrick tried to say many things about this. One thing is, you can't tell people the truth. I think many have tried to tell people the truth. You can only show them the mace. And that was one of my main goals with the interactive game, to allow the player to play it and try to solve it themselves. And I think that was one of Kubrick's main goals with his movie. You cannot tell straight up to people. You have to engage them and make them curious about the narrative of the movie, and then they try to solve it themselves. Then you get the viewer engaged into solve the narrative, and that's the best we can do as filmmakers, or if you write books. And I think that was one main reason. But also, it's very important to mention, in the movie, they are telling us that it's an Indian burial ground. And we all talked about ghosts and the Professor Cox.
For the audience, there's a picture of Jack standing over the labyrinth, like some demiurge. All right, next slide.
Yeah.
So gold room.
And then we have the gold room. And the gold room is very important. The gold room is very important narrative and in the movie. Gold is associated with the sun in esoteric lore. So gold is associated with the sun. So the gold room is also the sun room. And the main, the most important thing here is to understand it's the sun room. And I will come to that soon. So you have the moon room and you have the sun room. And in the gold room or the sun room goes the elite from hell, the shadow side of humanity. More on July the 4th, 1921. I will come back to this gold room. It's very, very important in the movie. And if you miss it, you... And I will tell you what the date is all about. What he means with the sun room. Mm-hmm. And the elite in the gold or sun room.
Been here. Yes.
And now we come to a very important detail.
People descent have pointed into out. Hell in the future. Okay. This should be right.
Yeah. Descent into hell in the future. And we come to Young, Carl Gustav Young. And Carl Gustav Young was a very important person for Kubrick. His first movie was named Shadow of Fear. And he was very fascinating with Carl Gustav Jung. And Carl Gustav Jung is, of course, very famous for his archetypes. And what the archetype, they are underlying base forms or the archetype as such from which emerge images and motifs such as the mother, the child, the trickster, and the flood, among others. And we have, of course, the shadow is a very, very famous saying of Jung, shadow self, the anima, the animus, and the self. These are a result of collective, shared, ancestral memories that may persist in art, literature, and religion, but aren't obvious to the eye. These recurring themes help us understand the Jungian archetypes. We have stories we are retelling through history about heroes, evil, and it seems to be very stuck in the mentality of the human race. They always come back to these stories for a reason, according to Jung. And it's important to mention here that the mother, the child, and the trickster, and the flood is among others, is among these archetypes. And all of these are in the movie, The Shining. So you can see Kubrick's influence of Jung had a huge impact on Kubrick. And already, it's very important to mention, already in his first movie, The Shadow of Fear. And the reason why that's important is to show that Kubrick didn't let go of Jung. It was something he was very interested in. And Carl Gustav Jung was interested in esoteric lore, like alchemy, the Gnostic, the Nag Hammadiya Library. And I think Kubrick became interested in esoteric matters through Jung. That's the reason why I think it's important to mention that he's already, as his first movie, he became interested in Jung and I think esoteric matters, practices and esoteric theories. So I think he was very well versed in esoteric literature and theory and practices. And I see it in many of his movies, not only The Shining. You have it in Space Odyssey 2001, for example. Mm-hmm. So it's no coincidence. That's what I tried to say. He knew a lot about esoteric practices. Yeah, Jung described the animus as the unconscious masculine side of a woman and the anima as the unconscious feminine side of a man, each transcending the personal psyche. He believed they are the abstract symbol sets that formulate the archetype of the self. So we have this unconscious side of ourself and the shadow side in our psyche we are not conscious about. is quite much Freud in this as well, and Jung studied under Freud, so it's no coincidence. Yeah, so we have next slide. So we have three important archetypes for Jung, and we find them also in the movie. You have the mother, the child, the flood. And of course, the mother and child is no many movies have a mother and a child in it, but in this case, you also have the flood. So yeah, you have three parts.
Not many movies have an elevator full of blood.
Exactly. And I will point to more details so I can strengthen my theory here.
Right.
Yeah, so you have the first movie of Kubrick, Shadow of Fear, and it's a lot about the river. And you have water. And water is a very important element in esoteric practices and theory. Water is also a symbol of the unconscious and the metaphysical. And this is a point many people are missing. In the Old Testament, for example, they think Noah traveled through water. No, he traveled through metaphysical space. You will not find the ark. There are no ark. But it's hard for people to think in metaphysical terms. They have to train themselves and understand the symbols. So the water is a symbol for the unconscious and the metaphysical as well. What is lying beneath the surface, so to speak. And you have the Sigmund Freud idea of the iceberg was under the water and was above the water and all that.
Right.
But this is Kubrick's first movie. So already in a very early age, he was interested in these themes and these theories. And that's very important to mention. As I said, his extensive knowledge in the esoteric lore can be explained through his early interest in Jung. So in the movie Shadow of Fear, you have a couple of soldiers who confront the inner darkness, and one goes mad. And in one scene, you see one of the soldiers going in the river, and it seems totally lost. And they confront the darkness in himself. The movie ain't that good, but you should see it anyway because it starts Kubrick's career and his interest, I think, in Jung and the esoteric. Yeah, next slide. So now we come into the detail, because as some people have pointed out, on the table in one of the scenes where Jack is talking about the hotel, you see the red book on the table. And you have this room 237. So I was curious, because I bought the red book, the big version. It's a big one.
Yeah.
So I think what's on the page 237, I had to look into it, and I find a heading on page 237 called Descent into Hell in the Future. You can look it up yourself. It's on page 237 in the Red Book, Carl Jung's The Red Book. Same number as the room, 237. Yeah, next slide. So under the heading, Descent into Hell in the Future, and I quote, "A thousand serpent crowd around, wailing the sun. Deep night falls. A red stream of blood, thick red blood springs up, surging for a long time, then ebbing. I am seized by fear. What did I see?" So you have here a red stream of blood. Danny, what did I see? You have one clip, one fast clip of Danny when he imagined this. He sees it inside himself, in his inner eye. And he's like scared. What did I see? And you have, of course, room 237 and page 237. And a footnote from Young. And the footnote is very long, so I try to make it dense or shorten it. But it says, "I was in great confusion as to the meaning of all those things I had seen. The beetle, of course, I knew to be an ancient sun symbol and the setting sun. The secret murder of the hero I could not understand at all. I could not then realize that it was also archetype. And this red book is in one scene in The Shining. And Kubrick was famous. He didn't do anything. Everything was there for a purpose. So I think he wants us to think about archetypes. And I think he strengthened it with this page in the book, where you see that the heading is Descent into Hell in the Future. Yeah, that was part one. And now we will come to the details of this. And I will decode the room 237 for you.
Awesome. Yeah, Vance is going to take us through the labyrinth. I'm going to step out for just one second. Vance, yep. take us through the maze.
All righty, here we go.
So, the Tree of Life and the Moon. Next slide. So you have the Tree of Life in Kabbalah, one of the most important symbols in esoteric lore. But you also have the Tree of Clifford, and the Tree of Clifford is the other side of the Tree of Life. It's the shadow side of the Tree of Life. And it is also called the other side of the Tree of Life, Sitra Ara, the shallow side of the Tree of Life, or the other side of matter. Tree of Knowledge is also one name for it. In the Bible, they mention it as the Tree of Knowledge in Genesis. So this is two trees. So you have the moon room 237, and I agree that it is a connection between the moon and the room, but it's not the physical moon Kubrick are talking about. But it is about 238,000 miles to the moon. And some say during the time Kubrick did the movie The Shining, they thought it was 237 miles to the moon from the Earth. So I think he wanted to point to the moon, but he didn't want to point to the physical moon as such. Yeah, next slide. So you have the Tree of Life and the Tree of Clifford. And in Tree of Life, we have something we call Sephiroths. And the Sephiroth number 9 is the moon. You can see it in the picture if you watch the stream. And it is purple, and you have a moon and the number 9 in it. On the other side, on the Tree of Clifford, and that's the other side of the Sephiroth 9, you have The Cliffa called on the tree of Clifford. You have Gamaliel, the obscene one. That's the shadow side of the moon, the metaphysical side of the moon. So you have number 9 and equals the moon room. Yesod 9 is the Sephira. On the other side, it is the Cliffa number 9, Gamaliel, the obscene one, the dark side of the moon. So Kubrick wanted to point out that the Sephira number 9, Yesod, is the moon room. That's the moon. Next slide. The hexagram and Saturn. So you have the properties of Saturn, and I think many knows this, but the properties of Saturn in esoteric lore, you have, it stands for matter. Our world of illusions becomes solid matter, lead, masculine, control, time, scheduler, restrictions, and intellect. That's traits or properties of Saturn. It contribute to the planet Saturn or the sun Saturn. Some say it's the sun. Next slide. And Saturn is, next slide. Another symbol for Saturn is the hexagon, the six-sided symbol, or hexagram. And you have the carpet where Danny is sitting on a hexagon. And in the carpet, you see the cube of Saturn, the red cube. And that's the symbol of matter. Danny is sitting on the carpet matter. He's sitting on the Saturn's cube. Next slide. So Saturn's cube, the black cube, trapped in matter in time. Danny is playing in matter on the carpet. Yeah, next slide. And I think many knows that Saturn have a hexagon on its pole.
I did not know that.
Okay.
I learned something new, a hexagon.
So you have the hexagon on Saturn. And the hexagon forms a cube if you draw lines from it. So you have the cube of Saturn, the black cube. And you will see it in some main cities around the planet, the black cube. And that it's about the black cube of Saturn and matter, to trap you into matter, to make you ignorant of metaphysical matters, trap you in time.
That's the demiurge's job.
Exactly. There you have him. So in Lurianic Kabbalah and Kabbalah in general, you have Asaya. We call Asaya the word of matter. So everything you can register, all your five senses take in is Asaya. And it creates the illusion of matter. So Asaya is matter, and the force filling Asaya is Malkuth. It's the light, the force, the energy that fills up our world, that creates our illusion of materiality. And that's Sephira number 10. And Malkuth, but the word is Asaya, world of matter we call Asaya. Yeah, next slide. So Danny is playing in Asaya, the world of matter, on the carpet, on Saturn's cube, or Saturn hexagon. The pentagram and Venus.
Part three, let's get it on, all right?
Yeah. Now we come to the pentagram and Venus. And a pentagram have five sides, and the hexagon have six sides. And the pentagram is referent to Venus. And the hexagon, Saturn, and also matter, because Saturn creates matter. Trap us in time, trap us in the black cube, to restrain us, to hold us back from the metaphysical, from transforming, from go through matter to the metaphysical. We are trapped in time. Doesn't mean that Saturn is a bad planet. It is here to teach us a lesson. Mm-hmm. And transform us, so we start to transform ourselves. Yeah, next slide. So, a ball is coming, and the ball is red. And the ball is not the moon, but Venus. Next slide.
So Danny's playing with his train, the ball comes, he's playing with the ball, and that's Venus, okay?
Yeah. And he's looking up from his play, this right. game. Now we have simple numerology and a lot of esoteric methods, and very important part of esoteric lore. And you have the pentagram, you have the hexagram. Equals 11. 5 plus 6 equals 11.
Right.
But it's much more than that. Thelema knows that Abrahadabra equals 11. And Abrahadabra is the magic force, the magic word. And Abrahadabra is the key of the rituals, because it expresses the magic formula of uniting voice complementary ideas, especially the five of the microcosm with the six of the macrocosm. Abrahadabra is the glyph of the blending of the five and the six. Abrahadabra is also referred to as the word of double power. More specifically, it represents uniting of the microcosm with the macrocosm, represented by the pentagram and the hexagon, the rose and the cross, the circle and the square, the five and the six, etc. And Abrahadabra has 11 letters, and it is the magic force in and of itself. And if you apply gematria on it, it's not really gematria yet, but numerology and the Chaldean gematria or numerology, it equals 22, and 22 is the path on the tree of life and the tree of Cliffords. Mm-hmm. It is the connection between the Sephiroths or the Cliffords, 22 path on the tree. And you have 22 in the major arcana of the tarot cards. So it's a very important number. 11 is a very important number. Abrahadabra is very important in Thelema. And Thelema is an esoteric practice, not started by Crowley, but he's one who people are thinking of when we're talking about Thelema. And Otto.
Yeah. Fascinating.
So this is a very important. So now you have Abrahadabra equals 11. 11 letters, the magic force. microcosm with the macrocosm, represented by the pentagram and the hexagram, the rose and the cross, the circle and the square, the five and the six. And Danny has Apollo 11 on his shirt. So Danny has unlocked the moon room through the magic force by uniting the five and the six. He's rising up, and this is maybe the most famous scene. I don't know. Maybe the naked lady. I don't know.
Oh my God. I snuck into the movie theater when I was 10 to watch The Shining. That scene traumatized me even today.
I imagine. So we have the part four, the travel to the other side.
The other side.
Which now we are going to the other side.
All right, let's go to the other side.
Let's go to the other side. Well, you have the tree of life, and you have Sephira number 10. And as I mentioned before, it's Malkuth or Asaya. On the other side of the tree, you have number 10, but Clifford number 10. And it's called Lilith, the queen of the night. And that's the other side of the tree. The other side of the tree of life, the shadow side. And I want to mention Lilith, the queen of the night, the ruling force. Next slide. So Danny is playing on a hexagon. And a ball is coming. Yeah, next slide. And as I mentioned before, it's Venus and a pentagram. And now you have a sigil. A sigil is a symbol. And the symbol for the Clifford number 10, Lilith. And the sigil looks like a pentagram, upside down pentagram. And you have three moons, an upside down triangle. That's the sigil of the Cliffa Lilith. Next slide. So you have the pentagram, three moons, the Cliffa is Lilith. And Lilith is the ruling force.
And there you have it, you shining crazy diamonds. The first part of the fantastic presentation by David Block. Much more in our second part. Where does it all lead when it comes to The Shining? Believe it or not, it leads to Baphomet, as you will see. So please become an AB Prime member or patron on Patreon or Red Circle subscriber for the full dope. And it does support this Red Pill cafeteria. It will cost you less than $1 per episode, and that's a deal of many lifetimes. The alternative spirituality and philosophy of the Gnostics is more important than ever in this Philip K. Dick world and Gnostic times. This is our time and truth. Because we are high priests and priestesses of Hermes, the god of thieves, and Sophia, the goddess of smugglers. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self, here in the desert of the real. Hello and goodbye, as always.